Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. You know, we're going to spend the next hour or so gushing about Giannis Antetokounmpo, SI's cover boy of the week, who had an unbelievable game winner at Madison Square Garden. And of course, we're going to dig deep into the mailbag, which, again, we received dozens and dozens and dozens of questions. But we are going to start with the most pressing topic in America, and it really, honestly, the world. And that's Zaza Pachulia leading many all-star vote-getters. Not quite number one. He hasn't quite closed the gap on LeBron James yet, but he's almost there.
For sure. I was not prepared for all-star voting to be released today. You just finished writing about it. I haven't really paid attention to most of the results beyond the fact that Zaza is, I think, number two among West forwards.
Yeah, so here's the good news. It doesn't really matter that you haven't paid attention, right? Because remember, they put in the foolproof fan hack protection this year. So it's only going to be half the vote for the fans this year, 25% for the media, 25% for the players. And even though the players love to say the media doesn't know what it's talking about when it comes to voting, I think that we can generally assume that there's going to be a pretty strong consensus between the media voters and the player voters, don't you think? Like, I don't really see one of those two groups totally skewing out of control. I would assume that they would pick the most deserving guys, right?
So are you saying that the players are not going to stand out for Zaza and make history?
Well, hopefully not. Actually, I would assume that they wouldn't. I mean, if there's going to be any bias, I think it's going to be towards the flashy scores. Like, we've talked about this before. You mentioned some of your, someone that you were acquainted with in the NBA thought like Kyrie Irving was like the best player in the league, right? I mean, I could see something like that where a guy who's a real one-way guy makes a lot of highlight reels, does things that guys wish they could do in terms of ball handling and finishing, maybe gets a little bit of a bump from his fellow players. But that's not the end of the world if Kyrie Irving is starting the All-Star game, obviously. It would be a travesty if Zaza Pachulia was starting the All-Star game over Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, Draymond Green's, DeMarcus Cousins, Karl-Anthony Towns, LaMarcus Aldridge, and especially Marc Gasol, by the way. Marc Gasol was the number one snub in the fan voting process. He got fewer than 100,000 votes. So that's roughly, 25% of Zaza's total.
Nothing gets NBA writers fired up quite like Marc Gasol disrespect.
Yeah, or Zaza Pachulia ultra respect or viral campaigns.
Well, no, we'll talk about Zaza. So far, my favorite take of this process, I've honestly have not been able to read very much of it, but one guy tweeted at my old friend Dave Jacoby, I can't believe the NBA would announce something as important as the NBA All-Star game on a Word document, which I guess they released all these on a Word document.
Yeah, the press release, they've been using the same format for probably 18 years. I mean, pretty soon after Al Gore invented the internet, I think the NBA put together its All-Star press release template.
But my
it hasn't updated much.
My favorite part of that, though, is the phrase, something as important as the NBA All-Star game.
Well, you say that you were caught off guard by this. I will also admit I was caught off guard, but that doesn't mean I haven't been planning for this all year long. I just filed about...
Look, I just don't think that the All-Star game is that sacrosanct, okay? I will agree with you that the fans shouldn't be able to vote and shouldn't really control this as much, but I do think it would be amazing if Zaza Pachulia getting voted into the All-Star game was the straw that broke the camel's back. And we could all remember this as like a historical anomaly, because I personally would be a lot more upset if Dwayne Wade is voted in as a starter. But Zaza would be hilarious. I think we should all be behind that.
I read some really bitter tweets or a bitter column recently about a Baseball Hall of Fame voter who was upset that somebody else had kind of campaigned on behalf of a player to try to get his vote. I think what you need to do is just completely own what you're saying and start the Zaza for media vote campaign. Because if Zaza can finish like in the top two in both the media vote and the fan vote, I think he's going to have a legitimate shot. Everybody else is going to split.
That's
so what
true.
You need to do is like email listserv every other NBA writer and try to get him in.
Dude, the media can make this happen. Do you have an all-star vote? I desperately want one.
I don't. At least I haven't been made aware of it yet, which probably means that I don't.
Yeah, we need to get on that level. But look, we've buried the lead. I really feel like we need, before we dive into the mailbag, we need to talk Giannis, because I cannot believe what he did in Madison Square Garden this week.
Well, it perfectly dovetails the conversation we just had, because Giannis is by far the biggest winner in the All-Star votes.
And he should be.
Can you believe that Giannis Antetokounmpo drew 500,000 votes? I mean, that's like, I mean, the only people who got more than him, LeBron, obviously, Kyrie, obviously, Kevin Durant, obviously, and Stephen Curry.
Yeah.
James Harden and look, Russell Westbrook. Giannis, that's it.
Like, Giannis has an entire nation behind him.
But that's like the A-plus listers, right? Like, there wasn't really a weak link. Those are guys who either have titles, have been on the big stage in their prime. Everybody knows those guys globally. And now Giannis has catapulted past Zaza Pachulia and into their category.
Can I ask you something? I think you pronounced it Antetokounmpo. I think it's Giannis Antetokounmpo, right?
Sure. We're going to call him Giannis.
Isn't there a D in there?
A D as in dog?
Well, there's like a silent D, a Giannis Antetokounmpo. All right. Look, I'm not an expert on this. I will say that the sign that Giannis has made it, I now can spell his last name from memory.
That is a real hallmark. And it's amazing that he was able to do so well in a contest where the votes are calculated by spelling their first and
last
name.
That's true. That's another accomplishment, man. So, I mean, obviously, I think everyone should go read Lee Jenkins's story on Giannis. I've read almost every article that's been written about Giannis for the last like 4 years. I've written a bunch of them myself. And I mean, that's probably my favorite thing that I've read thus far, just about his journey over here and some of the early years. And I think what Lee did so well, it is capture the change. Like, he's got a kind of a mean, cocky streak now. And I mean, it started for me, I first know, like, once he body checked Mike Dunleavy and got ejected from a playoff game, I was like, wow. That's when I started to believe in Giannis's superstar potential, because you kind of need that mean streak to really dominate in this league and like be at that level. And he has it, which is like, now he's truly scary.
Well, I completely agree with you on the takeaway. This was a growth piece. I mean, Lee caught him at a different stage than when like the first wave of stories were written about him. And I thought it boiled down really simply when Giannis said, I'm not the smoothie kid anymore, right? Like, it's not like the cute, adorable, like, I'm coming to America, I'm learning how the world works.
I think
everything
the quote
seems
was,
so magical.
The quote was like, I'm not that kid that kid that loves smoothies. I'm not that kid anymore. That's like a movie tagline.
Yeah, and I think it perfectly summarizes where he is, and also I think where they're going over the next, say, 4 or 5 months. Even before that article came out, these last couple of weeks, the more I've watched him, because, you know, you honestly talk about him all the time on the podcast and off the podcast. So I've tried to, I've tried to make this work by getting into one of your interests a little bit more.
Nice.
And needless to say, I think the Bucks are going to win a playoff series. I am all the way in. I think that, you know, if it's a 4-5 matchup there, whether or not they have home court advantage, I think they're going to do it.
Isn't it ridiculous? I mean, there are 4 or 5 moments in every Bucks game now where you're just like, what am I even watching? Because like against the Knicks, we're recording this on Thursday afternoon, against the Knicks Wednesday night, he had like a block on one end where he just sort of like made, I think it might have been on Melo, where he made Melo disappear and then went coast to coast, took off like 8 feet from the hoop and dunked it. And like defensively, he's just everywhere. And that alone is unfair. But the offense coming along, I think if you polled every scout in the NBA, I don't think anybody would have thought that he would be this good offensively this year.
You know what's hilarious? You know how like League Pass has a little lag, you know, so you're not always necessarily watching it in real time.
Yeah.
Like I find myself, I'll be texting people, or like the other night I was texting you like, wow, that Giannis play. And then the person's like, oh, you mean like the baseline block where he completely pounced out of nowhere to snag it with like his elbow? And yeah. It's like, no. The time that he dunked almost from the free throw line. No, I wasn't referring to that play. Sorry, I'm on delay. What I actually meant was the 18 foot step back game winner that silenced the crowd and, you know, kind of took his entire swagger to a new level. I mean, dude, the guy just does so much in such a short period of time. It's like everybody needs to sync up. If for no other reason, the NBA needs to figure out its League Pass issues just so we can all appreciate Giannis simultaneously.
That's the experience. And he gets it. Like he already understands how to be a superstar. Like, in the post-game interview, I think he was with NBA TV, he was talking about the comeback, and he was like, well, first of all, I really want to give credit to our bench guys, Jason Terry, who helped get us back in the game, and like none of this would have been possible without them, which is like the exact right thing to say. True. However, like anybody who watched that game, Giannis did everything for the final 7 minutes. It was incredible.
Yeah, it's real shades of like LeBron saying, you know, we couldn't have done it without Shane Battier, you know? Like,
yeah.
he got it straight from that playbook. No, I mean, and Lee addressed that in the story too, though, didn't he? Kind of how Giannis almost went to school on how to act and how to behave, like the handshakes that NBA guys do. I mean, all of the cultural things that are kind of learned behavior or stuff that guys just kind of naturally know. If they come up through AAU or the college ranks, he kind of had to do a crash course on that stuff after the fact. And I mean, he owned it. You know, I actually thought that buzzer beater against the Knicks, I mean, number one, wasn't that the gray hair moment for Carmelo Anthony? Like that post game reaction, didn't he realize like he just got his first NBA gray hair? It's like, oh,
yeah.
There's a new generation. This is a different stage of your career now, Melo.
There's a second side to that story that I think only the true like Giannis heads who've been down from day one would know. But and I'm one of them. I'm on Giannis Island. So the first start of Giannis's career was actually against Carmelo Anthony. And this was, I think, back in 2013. And afterward, Giannis talked about how much trash Carmelo was talking throughout the game and how he was like, not sure how to respond. And then eventually he realized that even if he wasn't going to respond, like Carmelo was just going to keep talking. So Giannis had to talk back. And all I can say is that like last night's game was the ultimate response to the Melo trash talk.
Kind of silenced Melo, didn't he? Melo didn't have too much to say after
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you can't say shit after what Giannis did in Madison Square Garden. Because they were also, I think the Knicks were up like 15 in the fourth quarter and gave that game away. So that's a pretty brutal loss.
Not to shamelessly plug my own tweets here, but I'm going to. I don't know if you saw this. Right now, Giannis has the highest player efficiency rating of any player at age 22 during the three-point era. You know, barely edging out Shaquille O'Neal and Chris Paul. You might have heard of them. Higher than Kobe, higher than LeBron. I mean, the sky here has gotten so
it's
high, so quickly.
Out of control. It's out of control. And I'm sorry to go, we really are gushing at this point, so we probably should move on soon. But it just feels like a moment. Like it feels like we are watching someone arrive. And there have been so many different young guys hyped over the last 3 years or so. And Giannis is just in a different category than those guys. Again, I mean,
you know,
specifically yeah, because he's the only one who's really winning and really like changing games every night. But it just feels different.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's making a big impact both offensively and a big impact defensively. I think he should be under consideration right now for, you know, all NBA and all defensive.
Yeah,
that's really what's driving, you know, some of his incredible advanced stats. And you know, one other thing real quick on his All-Star voting,
uh-huh.
He pulled in more than 19 times as many votes this year as last year. So he was already kind of this bubbling phenomenon last year. But if you compare like the first ballot returns, and granted, he probably wasn't a very deserving candidate last year, especially not compared to this year. But when you want to talk about superstardom just unfurling like overnight, 19 times more votes, you know, to go from like 25,000 or so to 500,000 is ridiculous.
It's wild. Yeah. And I have one last note before we jump into the mailbag. So you mentioned your Twitter. You tweeted out the video of his game winner. And the first reply I saw last night was someone complaining that he should have been called for a 5-second violation for having his back to the basket. And I just want to say that that person should be deported from the United States.
Well, you know who that person was? Probably Ron Baker, straight from the Knicks bench.
get away from me. If you don't ever come at me with takes like that on a game winner, just get out of my country.
Yeah, Ron Baker on the Knicks bench screaming for the 5-second call to no avail was one of the funnier images as well, to go along with
Was he actually screaming for the 5-second call?
Oh, you got to go back and watch the video. So you've got Melo basically in silent tears on one side of the court afterwards, and then as the entire play is unfolding, Ron Baker is like very enthusiastically screaming for a 5-second call for the entire possession.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm very much team Ron Baker. I love that he's on the Knicks, but get out of here. Get out of my face. All right, let's jump into mailbag. So
actually, I've got a first mailbag that's a perfect transition question here.
Okay.
This one actually came in from Twitter. This is not a fake one, by the way. This is from D Barton 23. And the only reason why I'm bringing it up is because D Barton loves to call you out specifically. Okay. He says, is Giannis being overhyped? Don't get me wrong, the dude is crazy, but players like Karl-Anthony Towns and Porzingis are barely being talked about anymore, even though they have similar counting stats on teams that don't use them as well. Giannis obviously still can't shoot, and that concerns me. He goes on to say...
How many tweets was this? Was this a DM?
This is two extended DMs, yeah. He likes to write paragraphs, that's fine. He goes, the dude's crazy, but if it's me, I'm still taking Towns or Porzingis before Giannis. And it goes both ways. Towns is definitely getting screwed because of all the hype before the season. He's better, but he hasn't made a huge jump. I completely blame Andrew Sharp for this because he predicted 50 wins in an MVP level season for Towns. LOL.
All right. So what are we looking for here?
So basically what D Barton 23 wants you to do is to pick between your children, because you've hyped up Giannis. You've also hyped up Towns. Now the world has decided that Giannis deserves the hype, but maybe Towns or even Porzingis is being overlooked. How do you square this? I mean, are we actually short shrifting those other guys? Or do you think Giannis is being properly feted?
I was at Wolves practice today. I'm still very much all in on the Wolves. I'm really looking forward. They play in DC tomorrow night, and I'm really looking forward to seeing them in person and trying to figure out what the deal is, because it's a tough team to figure out. Karl Towns is the one guy where he's not the problem. So yeah, I don't think he's suffering from lack of hype. There were like 5 or 6 different long form features on him like 6 weeks ago. So he's good. And Porzingis is like a deity in New York City, and definitely gets plenty of love. I really do feel like long term, if I were picking between the three, I would take Giannis over either one of them, I think, right?
Yeah, it's pretty close. But
it's
the fact
really
that,
close.
The fact that the guys have the ball in their hands is such a key driver, especially of this offensive revolution right now. We could talk about that maybe a little bit, the piece I wrote about the 50-point games this year.
Yeah.
But look, if you want to have one of the best offenses in the league, it's a lot easier to do it with a guy like Harden or Westbrook or Curry, Durant, someone who's, you know, a lead ball handler and playmaker, and Giannis certainly fits that bill. You know, as Lee would say, he's the new tallest, longest point guard of all time.
It's
easier to do it with those guys compared to a big. It just is.
And the other tiebreaker for me is that Giannis he's so gigantic that he can sort of play like free safety on defense and just wreak havoc both at the rim, protecting the rim. But he's also like constantly in the passing lanes. And I think he, I don't know what the numbers say, but he's got to make Milwaukee's defense like much better than they would ever have a shot to be otherwise.
Oh, for sure. And hey, you were mentioning going to the Wolves game and trying to kind of figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is just a working theory, but you know, hear me out. There's 434 players in ESPN's database for defensive real plus minus. And Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and Zach LaVine are all ranked 400th or worse. So, you know, you might just look for that.
I knew you were going to bring that up when you told me about that stat a day ago. I knew you were going to find a way to work it into the pod.
It's so smooth, right? It's just off the top of my head.
Totally, totally. I think we should reserve Wolves' judgment. At least I'd like to reserve it until I get to watch them in person. But I'm more on the LaVine bandwagon than ever and starting to wonder about Wiggins. So we'll see what happens. I'm curious to see how they look.
Okay. Hey, one quick final thought on D. Barton's question.
Yeah.
The All-Star, he sent this in before the All-Star votes came out. The All-Star votes kind of confirmed his assumption. I mean, Giannis completely blew away both Porzingis and Towns in terms of All-Star votes. I mean, he got more than triple both of them.
Towns definitely shouldn't be on the All-Star team, given how bad Minnesota's been. And Porzingis, if he makes it, will be a coach's pick, right?
Yeah, and well, here's where it gets pretty interesting. Carmelo has 189,000 All-Star votes, and mm-hmm. Porzingis has 184,000. How does Melo handle it if Porzingis beats him out?
Probably not well. I don't know. The way Melo looked after the game, after the Bucks game, like, it does not inspire a whole lot of confidence for the rest of the Knicks season. And there have also been some quotes, like Hornacek basically threw up his hands over the defense earlier this week. So it's just not looking great.
Look, I'm actually really impressed that Hornacek made it this far. Because he has to be around Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah's defense every single day for months, right? He made it all the way into the new year without going to the, I guess we just can't play defense card, which that's pretty impressive.
It's not great. All right, before we move on, today's show is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new, delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novices to seasoned home cooks short on time. Ben, are you a seasoned home cook or a novice?
Oh, I'm a novice for sure. But what I love about HelloFresh is they're not lying when they talk about the preparation times. I've tried a few of these different at-home food delivery services. Some of them are like, oh yeah, it's going to take 15 minutes. And then 3 hours later, you got your finger stuck in a cheese grater and you're wondering, like, you know, how did life come to this?
Right.
HelloFresh, the recipes are not that complicated. They really don't take that long to put together. And what I think was my real takeaway from the experience of cooking a few meals with HelloFresh is just efficient. Like, they're not making you do all these crazy extra steps to like turn you into like a 5-star Michelin rated chef, right? Like, it's just a good solid meal that isn't going to be needlessly overcomplicated. You're not trying to really impress anyone, right? You're just trying to eat dinner. And that's what HelloFresh does. I'm a vegetarian. I'm pretty picky when it comes to food. The first batch that they sent me was unreal. It was like off the charts, tasty, pretty healthy too. I co-sign HelloFresh, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I do too. I like the fresh ingredients that they send, specifically because, like, I don't really know how to pick out like the right lettuce and the right fruits for like different seasonings and everything else, but they hook you up. So go to HelloFresh.com right now and you can get $35 off your first week of deliveries. So HelloFresh.com and enter Floor when you subscribe. Check it out.
HelloFresh.com. Promo code FLOOR.
If you're enjoying this podcast, then check out the Seth Davis Podcast.
Mike Krzyzewski this week is going to have back surgery and hand things over to his associate head coach and former player, Jeff Capel. So I talked with Fran and Mike about how that news will impact the program.
I don't think it's going to be all that much different with Jeff in charge, Jeff Capel. The preparation will be the same.
And now you come into what is the most challenging and deep conference in college basketball, and you say, okay, not only win games, but also figure out a way to play that's going to win a championship.
Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes of the Seth Davis Podcast wherever you download your shows.
Let's get back into it now. So Our first question here is from Yuan, who listened. He says, I listened to the Millsap trade thoughts. You didn't mention one pseudo contender that might be the most interesting of all, Spurs. Any thoughts? What do you think?
Yeah, well, I love that concept because Millsap is a Spurs type player, and almost all these players that I'm always hyping up that you're telling me I get too excited about, like, what do you know? They're Spurs type players.
Totally.
I guess my question though is, what's the package you can get the Spurs, the Hawks excited about going back, right? Because, you know, you're going to want fairly young talent. You're definitely going to want draft picks. We know the Spurs pick towards the end of the first round every single year. You look at their extraneous pieces. I don't see a ton that would like really get you excited, if you're Atlanta. And so I think it's just kind of a question where if there is this little bidding war for Millsap, and I really hope there is, by the way.
Right.
I don't think San Antonio can keep up.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we started the year kind of wondering out loud whether the Spurs would just flip LaMarcus Aldridge for Millsap. And
You can't do that. You can't do that.
No, I don't think you should do that solely because I think LaMarcus is actually kind of a better matchup against the Warriors, which is really all the Spurs should worry about. And I mean, Millsap is such a Spur. Like, it would be perfect. But I don't think he, just because he's a free agent this summer and he's also 32 years old, I don't think you give up another 3 years of LaMarcus Aldridge for half a season of Millsap when I don't think that puts you...
See, that's the thing. Like, yeah, Millsap is not going to get you an established star back in a trade just because of his contract situation. So you're, that... San Antonio, that's not even a discussion, I don't think, for them. Even if Aldridge was, like, unhappy, they would be able to get a better return than sort of renting Millsap for half a season if they were going to trade him.
I think if you're trading LaMarcus, you basically are looking to get younger and more flexible for the next, like, 3 years to build around Kawhi.
Yeah, and here's the other trick, too. I mean, you got to pair whoever that big coming back is. If you are going to trade for a big, you got to pair that big with Dwight Howard. And how well does a LaMarcus Aldridge and Dwight Howard pairing really work if everybody else around the league is playing stretch,
Yeah.
Like, LaMarcus is going to be running around like a gazelle on the three-point line trying to guard people. I mean, it's going to face some of the same problems that LaMarcus and Powell are facing together in San Antonio right now. And they're going to be in a situation, I think, when the playoffs come, where they're going to kind of have to pick between one of those two guys to keep on the court at all times, at least against the best matchups. And I don't think that LaMarcus and Dwight would really work too well, just basketball-wise.
The Dwight signing looked good for exactly 3 weeks. And we've already hit the point where you're like, how long is this deal? Because it really is like any scenario you envision with the Hawks, Dwight is kind of like the asterisk that complicates everything.
For sure. And if I was Portland, I'd be on the phone trying to steal him, being like, look, we'll give you a mulligan. And actually, honestly, same kind of thing with Hassan Whiteside. Like, I think Miami should really tank this thing up pretty hard, especially after the Justice Winslow injury. If I were them, I'd be trying, I've said they should trade Goran Dragic for a while. I mean, that really should happen now. And they should be trying to get offers for Whiteside because Whiteside's just really not that good. So if you're Portland, one way to get out of striking out everybody, on everybody in free agency is doubling back, around the trade deadline and saying like, so how are you feeling about that whole Dwight thing? Like, is that still working for you?
Yeah. I want to talk more about Dragic though, because Trevor asked that. Trevor asked, did the Heat trade Dragic to build around his favorable contract? If so, when? So yeah, I mean, who do they trade him to?
You just get rid of him. I mean, whoever's got a pick, I don't think you can expect to get a lot back for him. I mean, he's solid, but he's not spectacular. Age-wise, contract-wise,
contract-wise, he's pretty solid. Like,
he's all right.
You're getting a good player for much cheaper than he'd be available in free agency otherwise.
I mean, look, he's better than Brandon Knight. The way that Phoenix
exactly.
went,
they
screwed that pooch. But I really do think that most people judge their impression of Dragic off of his one really good season. And he's not necessarily that guy. And his numbers have stepped up this year just because they've had to, given that situation. But look at Miami's record. So I don't know. To me, he's not somebody you make a, you know, a huge sacrifice to acquire. The team that makes the most sense for him, though, no question, Sacramento. And I basically would say that about any point guard. They're kind of in the mix for the eighth seed right now.
I don't want to do that to Goran Dragic. Like, I like him. I've talked to him a couple times. He's a good guy. I don't think he deserves to get sent to Sacramento. Some players might. Like, Rondo in Sacramento was perfect, but Dragic is still good enough to where we don't need to jettison him.
So which other teams would you say would be interested? Because here's a big problem in the NBA. Like, if you don't have a point guard currently, like, if you don't have a playmaker who can really do it, you're going to look pretty pathetic, just like Sacramento, right? I mean, that's pretty much a hard and fast rule. So, you know, when I think about which teams need a point guard, New York comes jumping to mind. Mm-hmm. Do you want to do that? Chicago, I don't know if they've got enough to kind of make that work contract-wise, sending back. They could use him to kind of move on from Rondo.
A month ago, I was listening to Zach Lowe, and I think Windhorst threw out the Wolves as a potential destination for Goran, and that would be a little dicey only because, like, they're already so bad on defense that I'm not sure he makes a whole lot of sense. And you probably, I don't know what they give up. I wouldn't give up a lottery pick this year for him.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I just said that, you know, I'm not going to overpay for him for sure. He would be a big upgrade. I think he could kind of help unlock some things offensively for those guys. You know, he showed some ability to balance, you know, when Wade needed a lot of touches there. And you know, there's going to be some high usage guys he's going to have to work around, whether it's LaVine or Wiggins.
Right.
I don't think he's a guy you break your core up for. So, you know, it's, you're going to probably have to try to piece together some smaller contracts and, you know, sweeten it up with a pick.
Yeah. Well, look, bottom line is I had this conversation with Rohan, another SI NBA writer. I think it was like a month ago. I asked him what they should do with Dragic, and he said, we got to keep him. And I do not think that, I think we're both on the same page, if anything, because as you know, I'm a draft nerd. There are like five potential great point guards in this draft. And I think if you're the Heat, you got to plan on finding like the guard of the future in this draft. And Dragic is just not on the same timeline as everybody else. So I'm with you there.
Yeah, I mean, and everything has gone towards this. You know, it's kind of been a gradual process, and, you know, Wade leaves, Bosch doesn't come back with the health. Now Justice is down.
Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah, he proves that he can't be that number one sort of building block type guy once he's in that role. Then you start to have these free agency rule changes where it's going to be maybe harder to make plays for some of the big name guys because the advantages to staying with your current team are going to increase. So you can't just like bank on totally clearing things and getting those guys in, whether it's next summer or the summer after. I mean, to me, it just seems like a very, very classic tank it up scenario. And, you know, Goran, by the way, when they traded for him, everything was different. He should want to get out too, right? I mean, yeah. I'm sure life in Miami is awesome and having touches is great and all that, but where are they going? That's not really what he signed up for.
Yeah, definitely. All right, next question from Matt. He asks, given how well Harrison Barnes is playing and his history with Luke Walton, how much better would the Lakers be if they signed him instead of Luol Deng? Maybe even signed Bogut and or Festus Ezeliya. I don't know if you can include Bogut or Festus Ezeliya in that conversation, but the Barnes to the Lakers thing is hilarious because we would have killed them for that deal over the summer. And it would make a lot of sense to slot him in there.
Well, Lakers fans would kill to have Barnes on his number instead of Luol Deng on his number, right?
I mean, yeah.
No question. So from that standpoint, I can understand, you know, where they would have been coming from. I mean, do you think that Barnes is as good as his numbers suggest, or do you think it's one of these, you know, big numbers, bad team scenarios where he's just kind of getting it because he has to and they don't have anyone else?
Yeah, I think Barnes is not as bad as his numbers toward the end of last season suggest, but he's also not as good. Like, I think he's a solid third or fourth option, which, if you're looking for someone to just stabilize that young Lakers team, like, he would be kind of perfect. So I mean, it's hard to say because he's definitely not worth like $25 million a year or whatever he's getting in Dallas. But all told, like, I think once the salaries normalize, like, he's going to be, and other guys get paid, he's going to be like a decent starter for someone.
Well, so here's what I was going to say, because I'm glad you mentioned the salary, because I graphed the other day winning percentage versus salary just to see like which were the most underperforming rosters. And I think most people would guess like Portland would be on that list, right?
Yeah.
But Dallas also is like sneakily on that list because they've got Barnes. They've also got Wesley Matthews. I mean, they're paying Dirk. Like, they've got a lot of money tied up in a team that is basically the worst in the Western Conference or pretty close to it, right?
Yeah.
So, well, I think I like, number one, that
I like, yeah, that they basically gave Dirk a golden parachute and he's getting paid like 26 or $27 million to just chill this year.
Yeah. And I have no problem with that. But if the rest of the team is crash landing while Dirk's riding that golden parachute, like, go ahead and, like, you know, maybe dump some salary here or there. So I think that sets up a couple of situations. I mean, for sure, guys like Andrew Bogut or, you know, Darren Williams or some of these other guys could potentially be trade assets at the deadline. You know, they could definitely be in sell-off mode if you're Dallas. But then also some of those bigger salary guys, you know, they could get dangled. You know, if you're, you know, Mark Cuban and you're thinking, well, you know, I got Wesley Matthews and then I paid Harrison Barnes to try to kind of build some momentum here for Dirk at the end of his career, and Dirk's just not a part of it. Reversing course there isn't totally crazy, and having both those guys probably seems unnecessary.
Yeah, I agree. I also love that you were casually graphing winning percentage versus salary stats across the league in your spare time.
The sad part is that probably came off like I was bragging about doing that. I didn't mean it that way. I was just amazing. Doing that.
You're the best. Next question, Barack, which, not that Barack, but which 2016 free agent signing will be traded first? Do you have any guesses?
Oh, that's actually, well, we were just kind of talking about that, right? I mean, guys like Whiteside and Howard maybe getting put into the mix. And we just mentioned Barnes. So clearly we're in buyer's remorse mode right now.
Across the NBA, everyone who signed a free agent is upset.
I think Portland, that's kind of the place where this conversation would probably start, right? Because there's just so many possibilities. And because their need is so dire in the middle in terms of finding somebody who can play defense for them. So I would guess, you know, if I had to throw a guess out there, I'd say maybe Alan Crabb.
Yeah, I think that's a solid guess. I would say a dark horse might be Kent Bazemore, because the Hawks the Hawks have like some real solid wing prospects. So if they deal Millsap and go into like rebuilding mode this year, I don't know how much sense Kent Bazemore makes on that team. He's also having an awful year, and I think at some point they're going to have to pull the trigger. And he's having an awful year, but he's also still the type of player I could see other teams talking themselves into. Whereas like the Hawks have other options that they could develop if they wanted to. Another candidate I wrote down, Jeff Green is always a threat to be traded.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's actually a great pick. I mean, that's like the smart money selection, because he has like a 6-month expiration date everywhere he goes.
Yeah. So always bet on a Jeff Green trade. Next question here from the Lone Wolf. Who's a plus defender who looks bad on D, and who's a minus defender who looks to the eye like a stopper?
All right, you go first.
Okay. So again, as stated on past podcasts, I don't pay that much attention to defense, but I will say plus defender who looks bad on D, I think Otto Porter is a good candidate for that. He kind of, coming into the league, people were worried that he was going to be a step or two slow. He kind of looks gawky and awkward, but he makes life difficult for whoever he's guarding. JJ Redick is probably the most dominant example, because I think he, for whatever reason, people think of him as a bad defender. Maybe it's just because he's a white guy, but he has been very, very solid for like the last 5 years. Another one who looks bad on D, like, I think anyone who just, like, any objective sports fan who watched Andrew Bogut run would be shocked that he can compete in an NBA game. But like, despite how wobbly he looks, he's still great on defense. But I think everybody, most like hardcore NBA fans know that, but it's just amazing that he's still like out there doing it.
Yeah. I mean, sort of. Like, he's out there every second night.
That's true. That's true. He's sort of out there doing it.
I mean, this can go a lot of different ways, this kind of conversation. And it's a lot of it's so subjective too, right?
Yeah. Look, I'm just waiting for you to hate on the overrated defenders.
Okay, so here's the thing, though. And I'm going to just like say this as like my own screw up. When Willie Cauley-Stein was in the draft, I thought he was going to be like the next defensive superstar.
Yeah, like, I did too. That was a big miss for me.
Like, there was a couple games in that. Well, they had a pretty good run in March Madness that year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that I was convinced he maybe had a chance at the number one overall pick. Like, there was like a brief window where I was like, this guy is really going to be special. He's sort of like Noah, but he's probably a little bit more versatile. And obviously he's way younger. He's doing it earlier in his career. This guy is going to be a real backbone.
Yeah. I thought he was going to be like a cross between Joakim Noah and DeAndre Jordan. And I was really high on him for about 3 weeks before the draft.
And good news, he's already up to fifth on Sacramento's depth chart for centers. So
yeah, I don't know how much of this we can blame on Willie Cauley-Stein, though. Like, he landed in the worst possible situation.
No, I agree. But also, I think sometimes on those really bad teams, especially when you've got coaches cycling in and out, like, if you're a legit defensive player, you get playing time. Like, they just find a way to lean
on
you.
True.
And that just, that kind of hasn't happened. And it's probably because of the fit with Cousins and
well, the other thing,
and so on,
because that was the year that Cousins almost got traded to the Lakers, like the week before the draft. Do you remember that?
I do.
So, and I think like George Karl, Furious George, was spreading all these rumors. And I think like the Cauley-Stein pick was in part to appease Boogie. And he, I guess, wanted him because he didn't want to play center. So Boogie, a lot of people sort of excuse his failures by saying like the front office has made all these bad decisions. That one was Boogie.
Yeah. Again, that's like a chapter of a book that like every year we almost have to have like updated chapters to this like story of where Sacramento is going. Hey, here's another thought on these. A lot of these defensive specialist type guys, you know, I'm thinking of like an Omer Asik, right? Like, there was a few years ago where a guy like that was really in vogue right around the same time Roy Hibbert was like dominating the league, right?
Yeah.
And I think what we're really seeing this season, where the shift has gone so hard towards offense really winning out over defense most nights, you know, insane numbers of three-pointers by even more teams going spread, more teams kind of putting you into positions where your rim protector has to guard in space.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we're finding those guys who maybe still have that carryover reputation of being a really good plus defender and who maybe are better statistically defensively than the random guy who you would plug in after them are becoming really, really hard to keep like on the court and functional, and that teams are just kind of saying screw it with those guys and just kind of throwing them by the wayside, right? So I think that's more of a kind of a group of a type of player that's getting transitioned away from. But yeah, if you're just sort of that, like, you know, very traditional, oh yeah, I'm just going to, you know, stand right in front of the rim, block shots and clean the defensive glass and not really do much else, their value is decreasing pretty quickly.
So are you saying that the Wizards should not have paid $60 million for Ian Mahinmi?
Well, the sad part is I was kind of on board with that move because I was like, well, you know, it's kind of like you can play offense, defense with Gortat, you know, at various times.
No, I'm still like, look, I, first of all, it's Jan Mahinmi, my bad, but I'm still,
you're really on a pronunciation kick this episode.
I know. I'm holding out hope for Jan, but man, contract is rough right now.
Yeah, for sure. And that happened quickly. I mean, this season has really accelerated that phenomenon.
Yeah.
Hey, while we're just pronouncing names, can you say the name of Toronto's rookie who they drafted last year in the lottery pick?
Pascal Siakam?
No, that's their other rookie. I want the other rookie.
Jakob Poeltl.
All right, there you go.
That was awesome. One that I consistently screwed up on this podcast for about 3 months. So I'm glad we've turned the corner.
Poeltl?
All right, next question from our man Gus, who just keeps coming with the heat. This is another one from that he sent last week. If you could grant
MVP,
if you could grant injury immunity to five guys in the NBA, who would you pick?
Ooh. All right, you go first. I'm gonna have to think about my strategy on this one.
Okay, so number one is Bradley Beal. And that's
selfish,
like a straight up homer pick. Number two is Steph Curry, because I don't want to live in a world where like the entire balance of the playoffs hinges on Steph Curry's ankles. I think that kind of sucked last year. I want him to be at full strength. Number three, keeping with the theme of the pod, gotta say Giannis. It would be horribly depressing if Giannis somehow had like an injury plagued timeline from here on out. And similarly, Porzingis, like, we deserve to see 15 healthy years of Porzingis and Giannis together. And the fifth spot was really difficult. I'm going with Anthony Davis over Joel Embiid, and I'm sorry, Philly.
Well, we had a lot of overlap there. My number one answer was going to be Anthony Davis, because he needs it the most.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the percentage of games that he's missed throughout his career and the toll that that could potentially take on what should be one of the greatest careers ever is very real. Like, we're past the point where like we're, you know, like our tank has been on empty here and we've been driving for like 15 miles and we still haven't hit the gas station yet. So this is like crisis point. He really needs the immunity. I think another guy, and this will be my selfish pick, Blake Griffin, because
that would be great to get an extra 5 or 6 years of healthy Blake.
And because I think that the accumulated injuries maybe have gotten into his head in terms of how he plays. You know, they've shifted so much of his exciting plays away to mid-range jumpers and ball handling and passing. And if he just had immunity, and if he was self-aware and knew he had immunity, like he had the invincible button on a video game, Blake would be playing a completely different style, and it'd be so much more fun than how he's playing right now. I think Porzingis is a great answer. You know, the other day he was on the bench, like shooting arrows out of an imaginary arrow bag, you know, for three pointers to celebrate on the bench. And as amusing as that was, and as gif worthy as that was, it's not nearly as amazing when he's on the court crossing people over at 7'3".
For a second, I thought that was one of your weird analogies. But he was actually arrows.
Yeah, it was like a celebration of a three-pointer.
Great. I love Kristaps.
No, and it was great. But like, you know what's a lot more fun is when he's like dribbling coast to coast and like dunking on someone's head. Whoa. And then like pulling up for an Iverson crossover. And at 7'3", I worry, you know, that's not necessarily...
Yeah.
Or like something like what happened to KD. Like that could easily happen.
I didn't want to say it when we were choosing between Porzingis and Giannis, but yeah, like big guys like that, you always worry about their longevity. Not that Giannis is like 6'11" himself, but I think Porzingis has more of that, like carries himself more like a big man. So hopefully he stays healthy, because also the Knicks season was going surprisingly well until Kristaps has missed the last four games, and now suddenly they're back to being the Knicks again. So, yeah.
Okay, this one is going to be a sympathy pick, Mike Conley. I mean, we've talked about some of the crazy stuff that he's tried to play through or like bounce back quickly from. Mike Conley's been through enough. Let's just give him immunity.
Yeah.
And for my last pick, I mean, Giannis, definitely that's one that I went to immediately, because you just want to see where he can go.
Right.
But I'm going to try to switch it up here. Let me think. Oh, can we do it retroactive?
Absolutely.
And if so, I want to split it between Derrick Rose and Brandon Roy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, keeping Rose healthy, it would have been really cool to see him develop. Like, I feel like we missed out on what could have been like an awesome 5-year rivalry between Derrick Rose and Russell Westbrook. And Rose kind of fell off right as Russ took over.
Yeah, and we really thought we were headed for, you know, LeBron versus the Bulls too. I mean, that seemed like that was going to be a building thing, and Rose kind of sidetracked that, and now we're trying to kind of piece it back together with Jimmy Butler. It's not quite the same. I think Rose would have been an absolute monster in this spread style too, because of course he can't shoot, but he was just in permanent attack mode.
Yeah.
And the drive and kick stuff with four shooters, like, it would have had to lead to a parting with Thibodeau at some point, I think, stylistically, to kind of get the most out of him offensively. But he could have just been a complete beast in the modern NBA if he was completely healthy. I'm not sure I can say the same thing about Brandon Roy, just because he was so deliberate in terms of, you know, ball stopping and wanting it to do it his way. But in terms of a player who I just loved watching, you know, just kind of a different type of guy.
He was awesome, man.
He was unreal. And he's one of the great, like, where have they gone or where are they now type stories, which, by the way, you know, shout out to the Les Schwab Invitational Basketball Tournament in Hillsboro, Oregon. Did you know that Brandon Roy coached his team, Nathan Hale High School in Seattle, to the Les Schwab title this past week?
I did know that. I am following Nathan Hale pretty closely because of various Seattle ties that I have and because Michael Porter Jr. is his star player. So I'm pretty interested in Brandon Roy right now.
Yeah, it's just sad that, like, we're only probably 3 or 4 years away from someone being coached by him and being surprised that he had a career too, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you played? You played, Brandon?
It's crazy. No, there are people, similar to that, there are people who, like, look back on Derrick Rose winning that MVP and, like, freak out about it. But if you watched him over the final, like, 4 months of that regular season, like, he had a lot of just wild nights with that Bulls team where it actually didn't feel crazy in the moment for him to be in the MVP mix. But looking back, people are shocked at LeBron. LeBron didn't win it. You were probably one of the people who argued Dwight should win it.
No, I wasn't.
Good.
You know, I definitely did not argue for Rose. I want to say I was on Team LeBron that year.
Yeah.
But that's a tough one to call back to.
You were on the right side of history. But at the time, it was a lot of fun watching Derrick Rose. And the same is true for Brandon Roy. Let's move on, though. So Britt asked, this was before our New Year's episode, but I'm curious if you have an answer here. If you could get a player to buy into a physically related New Year's resolution, like losing weight, who do you think would take the biggest leap? My wish is Jabari Parker. That's not my wish. That was her wish.
That was Britt's wish. Yeah. Okay. Well, who are your candidates?
I'm going to keep it homerific here and say my wish would be for Bradley Beal to start taking HGH to prevent any further injuries.
This is a really dark episode. We're like, trying to cure people.
Yeah.
We're trying to shoot them full of drugs.
Brandon Roy.
Yeah.
Happy Friday.
Well, I know Britt, she's just trying to get us to call out the fat players because she's just hoping for a rant about fat players. And I'm not sure we want to go there.
No. Well, also, Britt, and we're going to get to this. We have an apathy question towards the end. But players take care of their bodies so much better now than they did like 15 years ago. So there honestly are not that many fat players left.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm struggling to even come up with anyone who I want to like call out or say is not completely in shape at this point, at least for teams that matter. Oh, I know one guy, but this could have been injury related at the start of the season.
Uh-huh.
But he's one of our favorites, Boris Diaw. he looked like he came into preseason with a couple extra packages of espresso packets like wrapped around his stomach. So
yeah, he definitely has looked a step slow. But that just means he's enjoying life. So I'm not gonna criticize that. Next,
no, I do think that's the spirit of her question. Like, if let's say he was in like peak physical condition, like does that make the Jazz like significantly scarier? I think there's a pretty good argument to make for that, but it's also unrealistic.
Yeah.
That's like saying, you know, we wish Big Baby would lose 40 pounds like at the end of his career. You know,
totally. I think peak physical condition for Boris was like 4 years ago, and you're not going to be able to make him 4 years younger. But he still has his moments for them. So it is, I will say, it's really not a good sign when he's on the floor for like 35 minutes for them. It makes all of our Jazz hype look a little bit ridiculous.
But shout out to the Jazz because they're doing pretty well.
They are. They're hanging in there. Next question from George Fraser. Given the insane popularity of the pod in Mexico, where I live, I'm sure you're going to start simulpodding open floor in Spanish. What other languages are likely to follow besides the obvious? Croatian, Estonian, Canadian, Coptic, Old Norse? Do you have any choices there? I don't think Canadian is a language.
No, Canadian is definitely not a language, but thanks to George for the
technically
the question.
Speaking, I'm glad that George is listening in Mexico, though. I love going international.
So this is going to be a weird term, but my grandpa's like legally blind, and so he actually listens to a lot of books on tape. And so he could listen to our podcast if he cared at all about what we thought and what we talk about, which he certainly doesn't.
Right.
But this made me think, what about American Sign Language? Like, could we get an audio, or could we get like a visual delivery where like you're correcting my pronunciation of Giannis's last name, and we've got some lady like moving her fingers like 5,000 miles an hour trying to keep up with your pronunciation so that maybe our deaf listeners could enjoy. I think I would be for that.
Yeah, totally. Let's get it. We're going to have a simul video of ASL. I'm in. I was going to say Croatian, but yeah, ASL is the only choice for us. Let's talk to the guys at SI and get it done. Next question is from Andre from Rio, another international listener. Sophie's choice. Pick the better sibling from each family. Steph Curry or Seth Curry? Brooke Lopez or Robin Lopez? Marcus Morris or Markieff Morris? Miles, Mason, Marshall Plumlee? Cody Zeller, Tyler Zeller, Drew or Justin Holiday? I think this is pretty clear across the board, except for Marcus and Markieff Morris.
They're a tied for best.
they're too good to choose. I don't know. No,
who's going to bring more weed through the airport?
Yeah. That is just ether. Wow. Yeah. As someone who watches Markieff Morris like nightly, I can't choose him. Okay. Cause that no one cares less than Markieff Morris. So let's say Marcus Morris.
That's fine. I think between Brooke and Robin, did you see Robin's double elbows that got him ejected the other night where they came up to do the new popular screening technique where you have the high pick and roll for a ball handler and you bring a screen to both sides? And so like he can go either direction and Robin somehow got in the middle of that. And his solution was just to like throw his elbows out and hit two guys above the shoulders simultaneously and immediately got tossed.
I completely missed that.
It was crazy. There's no way anyone who does that and picks on mascots is the best kid. And you look at Brooke, I mean, he's been through like 8 straight rebuilds, still hasn't demanded a trade somehow. Miraculously, I have no idea. So I think Brooke wins.
My answer to this question, like officially though, is that I want a team full of forgotten siblings. I want Seth Curry, Robin Lopez, I guess Markieff Morris. I think all three Plumleys are sort of the forgotten sibling because nobody can really tell them apart. But we could also throw in Tyler Zeller and Justin Holiday, and we could have Dan D'Antoni coach them, right?
Perfect. And he was just trending for his amazing comments about analytics. I think that's really a topical. Yeah, that'll be great.
I'm very excited about that idea. The next team that is going to tank, just get all of the worst siblings and do it right.
Okay, I actually have one more question here. This is from Michael Pena. He's a great NBA writer. He said, how are you guys going to do a podcast about growth spurts and not mention Isaiah Thomas and only mention Isaiah Thomas? What was the point of that discussion?
I am a little confused. I don't want Isaiah Thomas to be bigger. Like he's an extreme, like as what we were saying about Lowry, like and how a growth spurt would have like taken away his small man's complex that makes him great. Like that goes 10 times for Isaiah Thomas. Like I love him at 5'9".
Yeah, his ability to just kind of like wiggle around big guys and just create just barely enough space so he can squeeze off a layup in traffic is unbelievable. And I do think if he was like 2 inches taller, he never would have learned how to do that.
Yeah.
It just would have been different. He probably would get his shot blocked even more than he does.
He definitely has the greatest floaters in the game right now.
So I was doing a big post this week on like guys who have scored 50 points in a game. And my two big takeaways from it, number one, like we should be talking even more about Houston offense and how just ridiculous it is in terms of the number threes they're putting up and how Will Harden's playing and kind of orchestrating the whole thing. But number two is that Isaiah has been significantly better this year than last year, and he had already made a most improved player type of jump last year. He should get more buzz, and not just because of that 50-point game he had like right before New Year's.
Yeah,
he deserves even more discussion. And like the fact that LeBron came out and crowned him as a superstar, like said he was Boston's superstar, I thought that was very well timed because Isaiah's gotten to that point. It's kind of a one-way impact.
Yeah,
he's there.
Have you seen the comparison of his numbers to Iverson at the same age?
I have not, but I did think about that when I was doing that 50-point post because he got there more efficiently than Iverson ever did.
Yeah,
in terms
he
of getting
grades
to 50.
Out favorably to AI, yeah. Which is kind of shocking.
Well, it's crazy. And I mean, that was obviously a different time for the game, and we've come a right. long way in terms of understanding what's a good shot and like how to set these guys up for success. But Boston's offense is very well structured in terms of how many threes they're taking, how they can stretch you from side to side, and how much room that creates for Isaiah. He's so good at ducking into those short threes after the pick and rolls, and he's so good at getting to the basket and knowing who he can beat off the dribble and getting to his spots. So there, sorry, Michael, we didn't include him in the last podcast, but there's 3 minutes of gushing just for you.
And we didn't include him because he's perfect exactly as he is. That's the main takeaway. All right, two more questions here. First, Sauce Evans asks, how pumped are you for the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast night in Washington, D.C.? Are you familiar with the Rights to Ricky Sanchez pod?
You mention it at least every three episodes.
All right. Well, for anyone who doesn't know, I used to live with Michael Levin. Have you ever met Mike?
I believe so.
Okay. Well, so me and him used to live together. I was not like a hardcore NBA fan until I lived with him and worked at Grantland. And the combination of the two, like he was a Sixers blogger, is now a TV writer. And the combination of the two like turned me into a League Pass addict. And we had like nightly arguments over the fucking process. And we just like rehashed the whole thing over and over again. Anyways, long story short, our arguments like slowly became public, and like I wrote about it and we went back and forth, and his podcast kind of blew up with this other guy, Spike Eskin. And they now have like this cult following. And so they are all coming to DC, and they made t-shirts for this trip, which have you seen the t-shirt?
It was like a Jahlil Okafor jersey, right?
No, it's actually a picture of my face because it basically, when neither one of us had that many followers, he would tweet out quotes that said with the hashtag fuck Andrew Sharp, and it sort of became wow. its own like thing. And so now there are people coming to DC with t-shirts that say fuck Andrew Sharp on them. I'm honestly not sure how I feel about it. I'm 50% excited and I'm 50% concerned. But, you know, here we go. The Sixers are going to get their asses kicked, so that'll be fun. And Joel Embiid will sit, which is perfect. So, you know, we'll see how the Rights to Ricky Sanchez pod, the Rights to Ricky Sanchez happy hour goes in Washington, D.C. You're more than welcome to fly in and hang out.
What I just don't understand is, like, of all the people who we should be protesting in Washington, D.C. with t-shirts that are so vulgar, how did they settle on you? I mean, I can think of a couple of targets that might have been worth their ire.
It's pretty hilarious how far this has gone, how far this joke has been taken. And honestly, though, real talk, it's happening a week before inauguration. So I feel like a night with alt Sixers is a great way to prepare for the incoming herd of Trump supporters the next week.
Well, I mean, don't you think that Hinkie should have been fired though? I mean, that was the right move for the franchise at the time. Don't you think? I'm just trying to like tee you up for some red meat to like send these guys off the deep end. Cause like, I mean, come on, he was a joke. And we heard like that. I mean, it's a great piece by Chris Ballard, but the guy comes off like a lunatic, doesn't he?
I'm not taking the bait only because I've already granted Bradley Beal injury immunity over Joel Embiid. So my work here is done as far as trolling is concerned. But
perfect.
We should finish up here with a question from my friend Muse, who says, who's the all-time don't give a shit team? Players who are really good despite not caring at all. And he adds, if Golliver tries to pick the all hustle team, you have to quit the podcast.
Well, my all hustle team starting point guard is Delly.
Yeah, obviously. Delly is all five spots on the all hustle team.
I got Danny Green as my two guard.
No, okay, I will walk away.
What's your answer for the slackers? Let's hear these slackers.
All right. So I actually put a little bit of thought into this one. And again, like I said earlier in the pod, it's harder to do now. I feel like the best answer would have to come from someone who's older than I am, because someone who is around for like the real careless years of the 70s and 80s, like guys had like legitimate drug habits and were still dropping 25 and 30 a night.
Yeah, what you're thinking about is guys like Joe Barry Carroll, whose nickname was Joe Barely Cares.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, that was like a well-known nickname that someone brilliantly came up with, and that was just how it was.
Right. Like this is early Furious George era was like the peak of don't give a shit players.
That'd be like if someone today was like lazy Luol Deng or like lazy yeah. LeBron James.
Like these guys don't really exist anymore. Also our nicknames are not nearly as mean as they used to be. But I came up with five guys. Number one, starting at point guard, Rod Strickland. Did you ever watch Rod Strickland in Portland?
Oh, Blazers legend Rod Strickland. Keep his name out of your mouth, man.
He was great. Rod Strickland was awesome. And I'm just not convinced that Rod Strickland ever really cared. That's why he makes this list. Because I remember one of my earliest NBA memories is going to a Washington Bullets game and seeing Rod Strickland and being like, he's really good. Like, why isn't he more famous? And my uncle, who had the tickets at the time, was basically like, yeah, like he's really good, he just needs to play himself into shape for the first 10 or 20 games every season, but then he's awesome. And that was so amazing to me at the time, and still kind of is. And then later on in life, I found out that he had like a ritual where he would eat a half smoked sausage before every game and then puke it up at halftime. So bottom line is he definitely makes the apathy team here.
Well, I mean, another strong candidate along those same lines would be Andre Miller, because he used to famously say he never did anything in the summer except for hang out. And then he would work his way in. And like one year he showed up and his hair was just like completely crazy. And everybody in Portland was like, oh my God. And then, you know, he's like slowly tightened up his haircut as he tightened up his game. And he would, you know, kind of build momentum as the season went on, and somehow he lasted with this strategy for like 18 years in the NBA or something. So I think he's got to be in here. I've got another one at the spot that just came across my mind.
Yeah.
Stephon Marbury. He cared so little about basically changing his game that he moved halfway across the world so he could be a superstar.
That's like true. Instead of evolve, I am just going to live in China.
Yeah, I'm going to like duck taxes, go live in China and get statues and like operas made about me.
And honestly, that's one of my creative. Favorite basketball stories is how happy and successful he's been in China, because things were really not great for about 8 or 9 years in the NBA.
He was eating a box of Vaseline
yeah.
on a live stream like 4 years before live streams were even a thing. I mean, it was pretty bad. And so I think he's got to be in this discussion.
Okay. I like it. I forgot how much I loved Andre Miller for all the reasons you mentioned. He also, when he was in DC, he rode a bike to every game, which is great. So another one, I'll just read you the rest of my team. J.R. Ryder has to be on there.
Oh yeah.
Because he was also like, he really didn't give a shit, but he also was very good at points. And I feel like that he was from the era, like that's the last time it was kind of common to be that type of player. Hedo Turkoglu is another one.
Oh, yeah.
Who
legend.
Had a lot legend. Of game. And honestly, in my memory, he was smoking cigarettes on the bench. Like, I know that didn't happen, but that's how I remember him.
Well, the best thing is when you violate the NBA substance abuse policy for like performance enhancing drugs, and everybody's like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah,
like,
wait,
you were using.
Absolutely.
Like,
not.
What were you taking? Because it did not show at all. Like, that's always a real clean cut indicator.
And then the final two, the twin towers of my starting five, Andrew Bynum and Boogie.
Andrew Bynum, I think, is the Hall of Fame for this category.
He's Bill Russell of not caring.
Remember when he just chopped JJ Barea out of the air during the playoffs out of frustration?
Do you remember when he showed up with a tall boy at last year's NBA Finals and was just hanging out in the crowd?
Everyone's like, where have you been? He's like, I don't know. It's been like 3 years since I've checked in with reality.
Yeah.
I have a sixth man for this squad, though.
Okay, who?
A very late career Paul Pierce.
Yes.
I think the I called game Paul Pierce of just like, look, I actually know how to play basketball. None of you young guys do. I'm going to show up when it matters and win games like left and right for the Wizards. And then, you know, go on HBO and talk crap about the Warriors and say that the Clippers are a super team. And just basically everything he's done for the last 2 or 3 years, I think, is in this conversation.
No, I think that's a great one. I would also add max contract Chandler Parsons in Memphis.
Yeah.
Like, he is going to be so good at spending that money. In the past week, he's been linked to Kate Beckinsale and it's a Kardashian. Oh, Kylie Jenner.
Yeah, one of the Jenners. Like,
yeah.
That's really incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, like he and Pierce belongs there too, because I feel like he hit a couple game winners for the Wizards, and then he was just like, all right, I'm good. I've proven everything I need to prove, and now he's just cashing checks for the Clippers. I'm happy for him. I'm happy for Parsons too.
Yeah, the other great thing about Parsons is like Chris Hayes of ESPN.com did that in-depth story on the Blazers, like what's wrong with the Blazers? And he confronts Neil O'Shea, like, you know, you had the worst summer basically anywhere in the league. Like, how do you explain yourself?
I could not believe that.
And Neil O'Shea's response was like, well, look, we at least we didn't pay Chandler Parsons. Like, at least Evan Turner's healthy. Like, that was his answer.
No,
so
his
shout out Chandler Parsons.
Not true. But in that same Chris Haynes story, he says that, like, option one was paying Chandler Parsons. I can't believe that the Blazers offseason could have been worse than anything we've actually met, anything we've imagined.
I know that's a terrible explanation for how bad your season
yeah,
goes.
Like,
it's like,
come
it could
on,
have been
man.
Worse. Like,
if
I know that's like a very popular tactic in politics these days too. You know, it's like, oh, we could have gutted the ethics reform.
Yeah.
But
keep that
yeah,
one
no,
close to the vest, Neil O'Shea. But anyways, this was great. Good way to end the week. And we will be back next Tuesday with another pod. Thank you, Ben. Any final words?
No, I just think everybody should check out HelloFresh. Use our promo code FLOOR. Save a bunch of money off your first order. Cook for yourself at home. It's not too complicated, man.
It's great. It's great. Thank you for the questions. We'll be back next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.